Since it's so hard to get ready, I have to stay ready.
Hey there, all you hip cats, cool kittens, you guys and dolls, you diesel-powered disciples of cool. This is the Diesel-Powered Podcast, the voice of Diesel Punk on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and anywhere that you listen to high-quality, finer podcasts, said tongue-in-cheek, on the internet. I am your co-host, John Pica, the artist also known as Big Daddy Cool, and I am swinging solid, as always, from the Houdini Room at the Casa de Cool in fabulous Viva Nash Vegas. Joining me via the magic of the internet is the man, the myth, the legend, the professor, the diesel pope, the boss, Larry Amiette.
Hi, thanks, Johnny. Hi, everybody. It is fantastic to be here.
Outstanding. And of course, Larry is coming to us live from Dallas-Fort Worth. And joining us from Memphis, Tennessee, the home of the king, baby, is that wonderfully beautiful and talented, daring darling of the skies, Miss Daisy O'Dair.
Well, hey, hey, how you doing, all you spooky sheiks and scary shebas?
I love it. I love it. And we are treated to a very special guest host tonight. He's going to be joining us on a regular basis as a guest host, filling in for us over the next couple of months. And he may be new to the Diesel Powered Podcast, but he should not be new to any of our listeners who are familiar with diesel punk or retro pop culture. And he is the one, the only, the creator, founder, and host of the Fedora Chronicles, Mr. Eric Fisk.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and I hope you're keeping your chins up and your fedoras on.
You know what? I'm wearing my Indiana Jones fedora tonight in honor of you being with us.
You see, that just makes my night right there. I couldn't be happier. Here I am doing a podcast with some of the people that I've looked up to for the past year or so. I'm having a great, nice, ice-cold gin and tonic that my wife made for me for a little, good luck, honey, go get 'em, kind of like a little pick-me-up. And I'm just so happy to be here with you guys. It's like feeling that you get when you're growing up, and then you're invited over in Thanksgiving to sit at the grown-ups table. It's an experience.
Wow, we have done a good job, Larry, of completely deceiving Eric.
Yeah, I tell you what.
Because I got to tell you, listeners, this show is held together with duct tape and baling twine.
And a prayer.
And chewing gum.
Oh, well, and Eric, he knows the woes all too well. We tried to do, I was slated to be a guest on his program, about 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yes.
And we ran into troubles with his system, and I had to kind of abandon ship on that night. And but it's great, great, great to have him here. And, you know, he's going to bring a touch of professionalism to this motley crew because he's got the voice. He's got the broadcast voice.
I have the face for radio.
Oh, boy.
I don't know, man. You're a pretty good-looking guy.
Well, I'm really appreciating the fact that my wife's checks keep clearing, so I'm glad to hear that. It's funny because it's like it's so awkward because I've obviously grown into my body and face, because growing up I was told that, you know, I was probably like one of the ugliest kids in school, and all I could say to that was like, oh gee, thanks, Ma.
I think we've all been there.
Yeah, really.
Oh, well, excellent. Well, hey, we got a big, big show. It's been a couple of weeks since we've been online, and we got a lot to cover. You know, we threw it out there, Larry. Hey, what are we going to talk about tonight? And, you know, I was afraid that we were going to, like, be scraping the bottle of the barrel for stuff to talk about. And you kicked out this list that I'm just going, holy crap, do we have enough time to talk about all of this?
Yeah, we got quite a bit. I was thinking earlier, well, it's going to be such a short show. I had two or three things on the agenda, and then it just kept growing and growing. So, yeah.
Well, so let's and there are a couple of things that aren't on here because I got into the conversation late tonight, so I didn't get to kind of add some of my topics. But the one that I wanted to just kind of circle back from our last episode, we had a great discussion about whether diesel punk is retrofuturism and vice versa. And we got some great listener feedback in favor and against. And one of them was from your good friend, Daisy, Captain Jeff Harris.
Oh, the captain speaks up.
Yeah. You know, and he wrote like a four paragraph letter.
Yeah, he does that.
But I'll read his last couple of sentences because I think it sums up his thoughts on our discussion pretty well. In conclusion, diesel punk is, in my opinion, the more refined version of retrofuturism fiction. It keeps itself rooted deeply in the decadence of its source material while expanding broadly into the realms of science fiction and fantasy without losing itself to grandiose absurdism.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a wordsmith.
Hats off to you, Jeff, for sending us that listener email and weighing in on our discussion about the retrofuturism.
He said more about it than I did.
Well, this is true.
Well, that was really fascinating, huh?
But you guys were having such a spirited discussion. I didn't want to.
Yeah, we were indeed.
It was a great discussion, and kind of following up on that last episode, we had talked about the then upcoming release of the Indiana Jones animated short, the basically proof of concept, and it did release, and I'm sure everyone here has watched it. I'll just share what I thought about it. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was brilliant, and I wanted so, so much more. It was a great little teaser that, is his name Daniel, I believe. He said it on his blog that it was really just a proof of concept, and that's really what it was. But it was pretty cool nonetheless, and I still loved it. And, fans have responded in kind and, reached out to Disney and said, hey, guys, come on. Let's, make something happen here.
The maker of the film was Patrick Schoenmaker.
Patrick. I said Daniel, didn't I? I meant Patrick.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, Patrick. Great work. What did you guys think?
I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
What?
It's all of less than 2 minutes.
I mean, you could watch it right now and then get back to us after we get done. I mean,
you could really put it on pause, and I'm sure we can talk about something for 2 minutes.
I thought it was, I was like Johnny. I wanted more when it was over because it was just, it's everything you wanted from an animated Indiana Jones.
Yeah, he gave a warning that don't expect a whole full-length film in his blog. I remember that.
Well, I was expecting, like, at least something with a beginning, middle, and end. Something that could be, a 2 to 5 minute kind of episode. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it was. It really was a teaser trailer for or like an opening credit scene.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Indiana Jones animated series.
Well, I'll tell you what the first thing that I thought about it was, there's no way that this is just one guy or a small handful of guys. The level of professionalism was just simply phenomenal. It was as good or even better than a lot of the stuff that you see on Disney TV. And it reminded me of how excited I was when I saw the first teasers for Star Wars Rebels. It's exactly that quality. And
you can tell... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, please, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Sometimes I'm bad about that. You can tell
Daisy,
that it was made...
You always have the floor.
You can tell it was made by somebody who has a lot of love for Indiana Jones and wanted to do it justice.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think that... And the thing is that, I mean, what's his background? What's his education background, and what's his employment history look like?
He was hired as a concept artist to do that animated style, Disney animated style concept art for Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And he just did a few pieces as concept art, and... the whole idea of an animated indie, just like he couldn't get it out of his head. Lucasfilm didn't use it ultimately. And so over the last 5 years, he's been putting together that piece that we saw. That's all I know.
Well, that gets back to, I think that everybody's question here is because Disney now has the rights to everything Lucasfilm. That includes everything Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And the thing is that they're leaving money on the table. They could be making money hand over fist if they would actually do the kind of Indiana Jones movies that they should have been doing between 1989 and, what was it, 2008? There are a lot of huge gaps between 1939 and 1955. A lot of world history. What was Dr. Jones doing in the middle of World War II? What was Dr. Jones doing at Roswell? That's a perfect example. There are so many things that had happened that they could be covering, and it breaks my heart to say this, but they really don't need Harrison Ford if they're going to do this Star Wars, Clone Wars / Rebels version of Indiana Jones. Why aren't they doing that? I can tell
your
you
what... Your guess is as good as mine.
I have $20 right here in my hand for the first, for season one, the DVD box set of season one of The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones.
But, yeah, I'd pony it up right now. So maybe maybe those Disney execs who listen to the show will heed our call.
That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, Larry, let's jump into some of the topics that you picked out for us tonight. I'll let you kind of steer the ship, and we'll follow your lead.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. One thing we like to do on this show is to support independent productions. You know, one of them we just talked about, the animated Indiana Jones. Right now, there's a cool Kickstarter going. It's not really Dieselpunk, but like I said, we like to support the indies. And it's perfect for around Halloween. It's called 31 Ghost Stories. And it's a Kickstarter by Jeff Provine. So, anybody that's had kids that grew up loving Goosebumps and scary stories to tell in the dark, well, this is a 100-page book that he's producing. And as he says, he quote, it's packed with all ages tales that will rattle your nerves, bust your gut, and warm your heart. It looks like a cool project. It's titled 31 Ghost Stories. You can find it at Kickstarter. And this was recommended to me and asked that we promote it on the show by a fan. And thought I would pass this along.
Outstanding. Yeah, very cool. Thank you.
Okay, do we want to talk about Timeless?
Yeah, I've not seen it yet.
You haven't?
But
you and Daisy have. So yeah.
I watched it today just for the show.
Well, you know what? I had it on my agenda to do at lunch today, to watch it on Hulu, and man, day jobs suck, guys.
I hear you, man.
And it just did not happen. But you know what? And Eric, I don't think you've seen it yet either.
No, I haven't. It's one of those things that it's my family and I, we have a limited time budget. We limit the amount of TV that we watch each week. And we will cycle through, like right now, our big thing to watch as a family is Star Wars Rebels and a few other TV shows. But the thing is that we have the open door policy for documentaries. You can watch all the documentaries you want until your eyes fall out. That's okay. But I did catch a couple of minutes, of it, and you know what it had occurred to me. It reminded me of when the Fox Network tried to reboot Doctor Who. It feels like they're trying to do an American version of Doctor Who. Am I wrong?
You're wrong.
Okay, good.
Look at it that way.
I can't see it. I almost got a hint of Time Tunnel, except as a villain in it. It's the storyline is that this company has invented a time machine that no one knew about until the villain in the show, by the name of Garcia Flynn, steals the time machine with the goal of changing history. Well, it turns out that was a more advanced version. They had a backup, an older backup, and the Department of Homeland Security drafts a history professor, a soldier, and a Delta Force soldier, and the scientist to follow him back in time and to try to stop him from changing history. And that's the storyline.
And so only the first episode has aired so far, is that right?
No, there's like three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been three episodes. There's been the first one, which involved the Hindenburg. Mm-hmm. And then the second one involved the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And it looks like the third one has something to do with atomic testing around Las Vegas. I haven't gotten around to that one yet.
Right. Now, the fourth one's about to show on October 24th, and that's going to go back to being a diesel punk theme set in Nazi Germany.
Ooh.
And it's titled Party at Castle Valar. So they have the first episode was diesel punk, like Daisy just mentioned. Then they went to the Civil War, then to kind of the Rat Pack era in Vegas, and now they're going to go back to diesel punk in the fourth episode, and that's going to show just next week on October 24th.
Yeah. I know what is on my slate for this weekend.
I think I'm going to have to catch up with you too, John.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to, if only three episodes are out so far, I think I can catch those three episodes on a Saturday night binge.
Daisy, what did you think of it?
What did I think? Well, I've only seen the first one. I want to watch the other two because the one about the atomic testing in Las Vegas kind of intrigued me because that period is always interesting to me too. But I thought it was pretty interesting. I like how they had I like how their team was people who had three different ways of looking at history. Like, the professor, she's fascinated and wants to keep everything historical. And then there's the Delta Force guy who, just wants to do his job no matter what it takes, even if he wants to alter history. He doesn't seem to care much about that part of it. And then you have the third guy. He's a scientist, and he's an African-American guy, so he has a completely different look at American history than the others do. You know, because he gets treated very differently than the other characters do when they go back in time.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
And that, I think, was a very ingenious idea to do that, because it allows for that dirtier and grittier subject that we talk about, in this case racism, to be pointed out in this movie and addressed in the series. And I thought it was very interesting how they handled that in the pilot. I liked they went straight to action. They didn't let you get bored.
No, it was action the whole way.
And there's some underlying kind of stuff going on in the background. It's not flat. It's like some of these characters shown in the movie is like, are they really bad? Are they really good? What's right. their agenda? So there's a lot of openings for a lot of gray characters in the show.
Yeah, if you watch the pilot, I'm not going to say what happens, but when you see the end of the pilot, you can see what it was that they were so careful. You know, they don't want to mess anything up about history, and the reason why, you'll see at the end of the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the butterfly effect in full display.
And there's still mysteries as to why he's going back. Why is this villain going back? What's his ultimate goal of steering history? And it has potential. It has potential.
I think too. I'd like to stick around and see what comes of it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to catch up on it over the weekend. I can't wait. I can't believe that I've missed it so far. But like Eric, we have kind of a limited TV budget in the house, and most of that is dominated by my wife and kids. So, anyway.
Anyway.
And it's even worse when you get addicted to a video game. I mean, I'm just speaking for myself. You know, I still play a couple of hours of Wolfenstein, whether it's Old Blood or New Order. I always play that. Like, I always get in a couple of hours every week. So,
really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Larry.
I was just going to say that has a reputation for being a classic dieselpunk game.
Both of them are. Obviously, Old Blood is a sequel to the New Order, and I could really go on for maybe a good 15 minutes about why it's if you're a diesel punker like I am, it's one of those things that you really sort of have to have in your arsenal, because the set design, the costume design, everything about it is. It would blow Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow, right out of the water. It's everything a gritty diesel punk movie should be, but it's a video game.
Wow, those are some heavy words right there, Eric.
Hey, maybe we can get a movie out of it. No, we got Warcraft coming up, so maybe we can get a movie out of this. Who knows?
Well, actually, Larry, Warcraft already has been in the theaters and gone like 5 days later.
Really? See, that's why I thought, oh, okay. Because the ads looked great for it.
Yeah, you know, it did great overseas, but nobody in the U.S. went and saw it.
Obviously not.
Because everybody was playing it at home.
I guess so. Couldn't get them away from the game.
Well, speaking of video games.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We saw the announcement for Earhart.
Right. You want to talk about it?
I posted the article on our Facebook page about it. But you know, I really didn't dive really deeply into the concept of the game. It's a sky aeronautic based game.
And
that's about all I know about it.
It's a dieselpunk rogue-like game where you fly around in a plane to these different islands that are in the sky. And that's really all I knew about it, too, because I don't play games that much, but the trailer made it look like the kind of game that I would play if I did. Because it really looks cool.
Well, that's the perfect place to start. I mean, I think games are for everybody. I think that there's a game out for everybody who is listening. Whether it's Tetris or Skylanders, which is a game that my kids love to play as well, Wolfenstein, there's a game out for everybody. You just have to get that hook. You just have to get in on the ground level.
And I do like playing games when I play them. I just don't do it that often. I don't do it enough to justify, you know, having special game playing stuff. But if this is something you can do on the laptop, if Earhart's something you can play on the computer, I might consider trying to play it.
Yeah, my problem, I just have to, I'm juggling too much at one, too much already. I used to play an occasional video game, but I couldn't do it now. Now, this one describes itself as a, quote, dieselpunk action game. And to me, that always gets me excited when I hear the producers use the term dieselpunk. Another thing that's cool about this is the protagonist in the game is a woman.
Yeah.
Go by the name of, wait for it, Amelia. We could have shown that one coming with a game named Earhart. By the way, spelled Airheart for all the listeners.
Yeah, and when I first saw that, I thought, because there is a Steam Power Giraffe song that has that same title. It's about a girl who's part girl, part plane, long story. But anyway. Seriously, part girl, part plane.
Well, that sounds interesting.
It's a long song. But yeah. I thought maybe it was a reference to them, but then I found out there was another video game back in the 80s. It was a video game or a computer game. I just briefly saw it while I was Googling that it was going by the name Earhart. So apparently, you know, that name's been used plenty of times before. Mm-hmm. But I thought it's a nice little pun.
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't see what it was rated. Did you notice what it was rated when you saw the video?
Oh, you know what? Give me a moment and let me check.
Yeah. I always like to pass that along since we have, so many listeners with families, with children. I think it's pretty exciting. It's always exciting to me whenever I see anybody in the industry use the word dieselpunk. That's one thing I noticed that PC... different types of gamers are starting now to churn out video games with the description of, quote, dieselpunk a lot more often, which makes sense since the term dieselpunk originated as a game. That's makes sense to me.
Okay, I don't see anything about a rating on the website. But I do know that it already came out. It's already came out. It says it's available from October 13th. So apparently it's already available. You can go to the site earhartgame.com and check it out there.
Okay.
It looks like a great game that would be fun to play with younger kids.
Yeah, it looks fun.
It does.
That's a big deal to me, is that it looks fun and it doesn't have to all be, you know, dark and gloomy.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I noticed when I saw some of the stills that it wasn't dark. It was bright and colorful.
But that raises the question, and this gets back to something you guys have talked about and I've listened to about in earlier episodes, is that if it doesn't have that sort of that sort of dark fighting dystopia feel to it, is it still dieselpunk?
Oh, I don't think it has to have that. No. Sky Captain then couldn't be dieselpunk if that was the case, which I don't think has a dark... If anything, I've kind of described Sky Captain as being the Star Trek of Dieselpunk, and that is hopeful. In fact, there's a branch of Dieselpunk called Hopeful Artesian. Hopeful Artesian. So it's a minority element to Dieselpunk, but it doesn't have to have the dark dystopian element to it.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed, and that was a great question, Eric, because we have new listeners every week who might be thinking, well, what exactly is Dieselpunk? Because you see a lot of the examples of Dieselpunk on social media and the internet, Pinterest or whatnot, and there is an overwhelming majority of it is that darker dystopian military inspired style. And there's an entirely different side that that exists too within the genre, and that is, you know, the brighter, more hopeful, lighthearted side. That's what I embrace, the hopeful Artesian.
Well, and that's a good point, Johnny. A lot of it, if you look back, we talk about decadence, and our listener I was so glad to hear him use the word decadence. Which for our listeners who are just tuning in, simply means the style or the feel of the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. Two-thirds of that 30-year period was dark. The 30s with the Depression and the rise of fascism, then the war years with World War II. But we had the 20s, which was not dark, which was characterized stereotypically as being bright and shiny and upbeat. So that's as much decadence as the Depression war years. That's where the hopeful Artesian, because everybody thought the great times will go on forever in the 20s. They were very hopeful.
Well, and even into the Second World War, mm-hmm. You had a very, at least in America, you had a very optimistic viewpoint of the world. Mm-hmm. In general, people were very happy. They were very optimistic. We'd come out of the Great Depression. We'd come out of Prohibition. And here we are. Even though we're fighting the greatest evil humanity has ever known, everyone was unified and behind it and, just had this great spirit of adventure in American culture anyway. And that really comes through in the pop culture and the media of that day. You hear it in the music, you see it in the fashions. And then, 1946, victory in Japan Day, the whole country, it was a total celebration. So
even the bulk of the 30s, as bad as that was, there was this sense that, well, we created this disaster of the Depression, we can fix it. And the New Deal was a lot of that. It was, we can fix this. We can solve the Dust Bowl.
Happy days are here again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so there was always this sense of optimism that throughout all three decades, even the dystopian societies in Germany and Italy and Japan and Soviet Union all promised utopian futures. And of course, we know that their visions were twisted and sick and really dystopian, but that was the promise, was that they could build a hopeful future.
I think what I need to do is remind myself once in a while, when was the golden age of science fiction, especially with the pulps like Amazing Stories and whatever? That was the 20s, 30s, and 40s, especially the 30s. Mm-hmm. Buck Rogers, which was synonymous with Man of the Future, started first short story, I think it was in Amazing Stories, in 1926, I believe. So there was a lot of that sort of that hopeful optimism that science will help us find a way to solve all of these problems. And you're right. And I think that I tend to think that there's a separation between diesel punk, which I mean obviously I love, but I think that the overly optimistic is what is like known as deco punk to a lot of people.
A lot of people, I've heard that term. I've heard that term. I think most of our listeners know that I think see that as kind of a, not so much a subgenre, but a thread within diesel punk.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree with those people.
So it's kind of a thread within diesel punk. I'm not sure I would break it out.
And how I would view that is, I would say all deco punk is diesel punk, but not all diesel punk is deco punk.
Yes, well, exactly.
Well said. Well said. Mm-hmm. Well said. A great conversation, guys. Okay, let's see. Hey, Eric, you have some information about a new TCM service?
Well, I'm really glad that you asked me about this, because here's one of my pet peeves is where is everybody finding their classic movies? Because I grew up on classic movies. We used to have PBS stations that used to play classic movies almost all the time. During the 70s and early 80s. And the big, huge thrill, I'm sure that some of the people here remember going to the movie rental shops, even before there was Blockbuster, and there was always a collection of really great classic movies on VHS. That was a huge thrill. And my uncle, one Saturday afternoon, sat me down with Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, and I was hooked for life. I mean, he was my pusher. If film noir and classic movies, if film noir and classic movies are a drug, well, he was my pusher. And the thing is that I can't even get into why I love old black and white movies. There's nothing like a really good black and white movie. Especially on rainy Saturday evenings or Sunday evenings. But the thing is that they're so hard to find. They're so far and few in between on Netflix and Amazon Prime. And if you try and watch streaming videos on Turner Classic Movies, they ask you first and foremost, well, what's your cable provider? Well, you know, we don't have a cable provider per se. We have high-speed internet, but we don't have cable TV, and we're not even listed. So the thing is that somebody has been listening in on my conversations and listening to, how come we don't have a Netflix for just classic movies? Turner Classic Movies has a thing called Filmstruck, and I've taken a look at it, and they've pushed their opening, their startup, to sometime in November. It was supposed to open up this week, I believe. But it's supposed to be just like Hulu or Netflix, and it's supposed to be the entire Citron and Turner Classic Movies film library all at once. Everything is there that you can stream anytime, any place, on any device. The only thing,
my goodness.
I mean, is that not amazing?
Wow!
That sounds
I'm about
great.
To watch some movies.
The only problem is that they're having problems with their sign-in part of their platform. Once they get that straightened out, I'm probably going to be one of the first that they emailed, so that they'll shut me up, and you'll be able to stream any of these movies. And the thing is that some of the ones that they have the entire Citron collection. So anything you could possibly imagine is there. I'm excited about introducing my kids to Kurosawa, and that would be like, because my kids love, my oldest kid, who now insists that everybody calls him Kylo now, he is really into like the sort of like the diesel punk Sith Lord samurai look.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot wait to sit down with him and watch these Kurosawa movies. Mm. And I think, guys, I think this is going to be providing, of course, that they do it right, this is going to be the greatest thing for diesel punkers like us since the invention of television and the internet. The idea that all of these classic movies are going to be available to us is just going to be so exciting. And we're not going to be limited by, well, what does Netflix want us to watch this month? What do they get? What are they giving us? What are they taking away? And all like that. And, you know, the only glitch I think that they're going to have is like if they insist on knowing what your cable provider is. Because that's a non-starter for me.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a streaming service at that point. It's a it's just on-demand cable TV.
This is supposed to be a streaming service. This is one of the things that they keep harping on. It's supposed to be a streaming service. Because I'll tell you something, like we are a growing minority into majority, because so many of us were watching all of our TV. Like I love Doctor Who, and we will watch brand new episodes of Doctor Who the morning after they air on Amazon Prime. We'll buy the entire season, and it's still cheaper than cable television.
Yeah, I never watch anything live, and my daughter, she doesn't even carry cable. She has Netflix, Hulu. I think she has Amazon Plus. And the combination of the three, along with internet streaming, she gets everything she needs.
Yeah, we don't have cable here either. We have an old fashioned digital antenna, Hulu and Netflix, and we don't miss anything really. And now CW, they stream all of their shows on their own streaming channel for free. We don't watch anything live. And, you know, truthfully, Larry, that's both an awesome thing and it can also be detrimental. Because remember that they did not renew Agent Carter.
That's true.
Because it wasn't getting the live, you know, airtime showings that they thought it should be. You know, ABC's still trying to catch up with the internet. Mm-hmm. And I think they've learned their lesson, but, you know, that's why...
And the very age group that it probably dominated in, the 18 to 20 somethings and 30 somethings, are doing well, like we just talked about. They're cutting the cable, and going to these services.
Yeah, the only people I know that still have traditional cable are over 60.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very
now,
true.
Now I have it. Now I do have it. Because it's some, you know, I like to watch, you know, my live news, stuff like that. But, you know, even then I could live without it because CBSN, which is a CBS streaming, it's like CNN for the internet. And it streams live 24/7.
Well, and I'll tell you, all of the networks, all of the major networks are available on over-the-air broadcasts still. You just got to get a digital antenna. You can get them for $15 at Walgreens.
Yeah, I got one, but trust me, that digital cliff is easy to go over.
Hey,
anyway,
Daisy, well, hey. Hold on a second. Here's a question that I have, and I wanted to ask Daisy this: are there TV shows? Because I could write down on a piece of paper, and I think I could guess what TV shows you subscribe to directly through a service like Amazon Prime. Like, you buy the entire season. Are you like that? Do you do that?
No, right now I'm just mostly watching Netflix and Hulu. But that streaming service with TCM sounds like something I'm going to be pretty interested in.
Yeah.
I have Amazon Prime, and I still say I'm a little disappointed. I mean, the best thing out of Amazon Prime has been Man in the High Castle.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Now, that being said, they carry the remastered Star Trek the original series, where they've cleaned up the special effects in it. is like the third time they tried to do so. They got it right. I'm an old Trekkie fan, so I enjoy watching that sometimes. But there's not a lot of shows I watch on Amazon Prime. I get more services out of their free deliveries and overnight deliveries and stuff like that. The television part, Man from the High Castle, is the best thing on Amazon Prime.
One of the things I would like to ask everybody here in this roundtable is that I would like to actually devote an entire show to season two when it's released. I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds, but I so loved season one. I'd like to actually see what other people's reactions are going to be when season two is released.
Well, now Johnny and Daisy, y'all haven't seen Man in the High Castle, have you?
No, I still haven't yet. Because I don't have Amazon Prime, and I can't justify the cost for the one show. Like you, Larry, I'm not seeing a lot from that service that I'm not able to get somewhere else other than Man in the High Castle. I've heard rumors that it may be released on DVD. If it is, I'm all in. But you know, right now, well, but you know what? Hey, Eric,
yeah,
it's a great idea to do a weekly or you know, I don't know, a Man in the High Castle roundtable. You and Larry,
sure,
could host that, and you know, I'm sure that we got some listeners that are listening right now that are like, oh, I'd love to be a part of that.
Yeah, I tell you what, that's a great idea, Eric. I tell you what, hey, if you're listening, folks, and you want to join in, just drop us an email, drop us a note. You know, we're all on Facebook. If you drop us a line and let us know that you're interested in participating in something like a round table for Man in the High Castle. When season two starts up, which I believe begins in December, doesn't it, Eric?
I think it's either December or January, but I'm going to have to also interject here, is that there is the great Philip K. Dick novel that it's based on, but the novel is so much, there's so much more detail in it, and the story is very different. I think that they borrowed so many elements from the book. I think it would be fun to also talk about the book and the differences between the series and the book, but I would be really into a podcast in the High Castle, I guess we could call it.
Well, we did something like that with Agent Carter, where we had a, what was it, a weekly round table? You ran that, Johnny.
Daisy and I did the Agent Carter declassified round table.
That was great. That was great.
Mm-hmm. But so we could recreate something like that when the time comes. We could even have a Eric, you and I love. I'm a big fan of the novel. It's almost a novella, but it's amazing how much he cram. It's kind of like do androids dream of electric sheep?
Oh, it's exactly like that. It's exactly like that.
He crams in so much.
Exactly, and. Also, the great thing to do is get the Audible version. This is not a paid commercial. Get the Audible version and read and listen like you used to with when you hear R2-D2 beep like this, turn the page. It's so much like that, where it's like you're reading the book and listening to it at the same time. That's how I get so much out of it. But here's another question. Oh, no, I have two questions mostly directed towards John. Because I know that John's an expert on this aspect of Agent Carter. Did they ever take into account the people like us who bought the series on Amazon? And because the thing is, I was a paying customer of Agent Carter. I mean, I paid for those shows. I pay for my shows. I buy my shows off of Amazon. You would think that as a paying customer, they would look at the number of people like myself and say, we got to keep this thing going because there are people out there who are literally paying to watch this TV show. Did they take that into account?
You know, that's a great question. And nothing I've seen or read even mentions the people who bought the entire season through Amazon. So that, you know what, that's something that I'll have to look at.
And another thing is that could I buy a season of Man in the High Castle? I haven't looked into this, but could I gift a season of a show? Like that? Could I gift that to John?
Question.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. You can do it through iTunes, but it's not on iTunes.
But wow, I don't know.
You would think that, because that's money they're leaving on the table.
Yeah, it's I'm not going to say. I was thinking it was exclusive to Prime membership only, but you would think, like you just said, they could make money by selling. I don't know.
I should be able to buy a series like Man in the High Castle, and even though my family is an Amazon Prime household, I should be able to gift that series to John. And if it's like it's $20, it's $20. It's $20 well worth spending.
Sure, it is.
And Daisy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree, Eric.
So.
Well, we'll get right on that.
That's something to look into. Great. Wow. And thank you for bringing it up about the TCM service. That sounds fantastic. It's called Film Stock.
It's called Film Struck. Like, you know, like Love Struck, but for films. Love Struck.
I thought it was stock, like the stock of a film.
No. Film Struck. No, that makes more sense. Your idea makes more sense. It should be called Film Stock, but they call it Film Struck. What am I going to do?
As in Love Struck, like you said.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I can see the play. You know, you're Love Struck. You're, like you were talking about, you love old movies. We all do. Okay, cool. Hey, Johnny, I understand we have some comic news.
Yeah, before we get to our main topic, we're still warming up here. wanted to share, you know, one of my profound joys is, of course, I'm a comic book lover. Those of you who have listened to the show for any length of time know that. And I am especially a big fan of Diesel Punk Comics. And one of my profound joys is when I get to see an artist's work that you really see their passion come through. And last week, and I'm looking for the cover art here. Oh, did I not save it? Last week, there were two comic series that debuted with an issue number one. The first is called Angel City. And I can't tell you who the creator was right off the top of my head, but it's set in, you know, L.A. during the 1930s, Prohibition era. And the mob enforcer in this story is a woman. And that's something you did not see historically. She's the one who goes in and roughs up the people not paying their protection money for the racket. And really cool idea, interesting twist on that whole concept. And the creator's passion really comes through. And then another book that debuted last week is one called Trigger Man. And it is about a mob hitman who is tracking his quarry across the country. He is working for, I believe, the Capone organization. And, not Capone. He's working for Maserati. Is that his name? Joe Maserati. How do you pronounce that? Joe Maserati. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, Trigger Man, beautiful painterly art. It's watercolored panels with the pen and ink illustration. Gorgeous. Check it out. And then this week, I went into the comic shop and I picked up the latest issue of Hellboy and the BPRD 1954. And I'm a huge fan of Hellboy and the Hellboy universe. And this series is set, as it says, in 1954. The Nazis, of course, lost World War II, but they're still trying to recapture their glory. And in this series, Black Sun, they have captured the some of the technology from another alien spacecraft that did not crash in Roswell, but crashed in Germany. And the Nazis got a hold of that tech. And so blending the magic of Rasputin with Roswell alien technology, they have created Project Black Sun. And it's really pretty cool. You know, for me, the Diesel era extends into 1957, so 1954 is right in my wheelhouse. But then I wanted to talk about something that really bugs me. And that is Diesel punk appropriation. And Larry, you know what I'm talking about here. It's so often we see it when a piece of media is obviously has the aesthetics of the Diesel era, it's obviously Diesel punk, and yet it's labeled as steampunk.
Oh, here we go.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Oh.
Drives me insane.
Unfortunately, I think that's just the way the marketing folks think is, well, everybody knows what steampunk is, so let's just put this label on it, even though it's not correct. Everybody knows what it is. Steampunk's cool, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and well, here's what bugs me about it in this case. So I'm talking about Steam Wars by Joe White. It's an Antarctic Press comic series, which basically is Diesel punk Star Wars. I mean, literally, the story is Star Wars. If it happened, you know, in our own reality during the Diesel era, but they call it Steam Wars, and
who knows?
It's fantastic. It's beautiful. It's fun to read, but it is so obviously Diesel punk and Diesel aesthetics. And what bothers me about it is that Antarctic Press knows better. I've given them more than their fair share of an earful over this very thing, because they have a couple of series that you know are in this vein. They did a series called Steam Queens, which is again set in the 1920s, and it's about it's kind of like a female sky captain story. They call it Steam Queens, and it's not. Oh, drives me crazy. Crazy. Now, that being said, and I have a Java update available, that having been said, I highly recommend Steam Wars. It is a lot of fun. We're on issue number 2. Strike Leader is the storyline. And it's good. It's everything you want in a Diesel punk pulp action adventure. So some fun stuff to check out. But Eric, you kind of groaned there when I said Diesel punk appropriation. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, well, let me just finish tying my noose here. See, I don't want to go off on a rant here.
Why not? We all go off on rants here.
I think there's a couple of issues that I have with steampunk in general, and it's not with the rank and file people in steampunk. There is this great TV show called Steampunked that you can now stream on Netflix. But one of the things that I really hate about steampunk is that there are a couple of pseudo celebrities who are trying to take ownership of this, and that there's this model, and she's worse than Donald Trump. She likes to throw around lawsuits around, like my kids like to throw around dirty socks and underwear in the bathroom. And I can I say her name? Why bother? I'm not going to give her the press.
Oh, there you go. Don't give it a
benefit. I'm not going to give her the press. But the thing is that, you know, she's nude. She's semi-nude in steampunk garb. And she likes to go around and telling people what is and what isn't steampunk.
Oh, and, I think we know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Blonde, very waif-like.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She really annoys the hell out of me because she's come after me once or twice because of the making the banners for Girls of Steampunk on Facebook, the Facebook group. And it was just like, the thing is that listen, I don't own Dieselpunk. I don't claim to own Dieselpunk. If anybody deserves to take ownership or be the guardian of Dieselpunk, it's probably one of you three. But I don't even think you guys are the police force for Dieselpunk. I don't think you're running around posting in other people's forums telling people what is or isn't Dieselpunk. I think the part of the enjoyment that I get out of it is having the discussion. What Dieselpunk is arguing about what Dieselpunk is. That's part of the fun. Mm-hmm. And I look at something. It's obviously something from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. My cutoff is, I think, maybe 1955. Your mileage may vary. But there are these people who insist on becoming the police force or the social steampunk justice warriors who are trying to keep it in a narrow box to the point where, you know what, with some of these people I give up. I just call it retropunk. But I think that the problem is that there's a couple of people out there who are trying to copyright steampunk under their own label. Those are the people that they're gonna kill that genre.
It doesn't even belong to them.
But you can't tell them that.
I know. It doesn't belong to anybody. We've seen this off and on. You know, Johnny, you've seen it too, especially on dieselpunks.org. Occasionally someone will insist it has to be this. I mean, we all have our opinion to say, I think it is, and to me, dieselpunk is XYZ. And, you know, a few weeks ago, we had an animated discussion about retrofuturism. Very different opinions on that. I said it's XYZ, and Charles said it was ABC, and, you know, we rarely met.
And I agreed with him.
And we just, you know, we finally ended on, well, okay, a friendly agree to disagree, because neither Charles nor I own retrofuturism, much less dieselpunk.
But you do own dieselpunks.org.
Well, that's true. But I don't rule it with a dictatorial hand. I let people, we recently had a discussion about how do you define dieselpunk. I let the community talk about that. If I want to express my opinion, I have a blog for that. And that blog is my little domain. And that's where I can say what I want to say. But that's as far as my authority goes, is my blog.
Well, very cool.
Thank you. But, I mean, you know, what Eric's talking about, I think I know what person this is. You see this a lot, especially in steampunk, it seems like. they seem to take ownership. And then I think there's some guy that's running around who occasionally throws out a lawsuit on steampunk and tries to claim ownership of it. But, you know, and Johnny, we've talked about this, what you brought up, which is where you see it in the media all the time. Not all the time, but all too often, where they lay a claim as something being steampunk. I've seen Sky Captain as labeled as a steampunk movie.
Oh, I have too, and it drives me insane. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, you guys are going to claim anything that's retropunk as steampunk. I get it. You know, all I can do is say, you know, share my opinion and say, hey, guys, you know, it's really this, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, I really more or less suffer in silence until I get on here and get to rant and rave about it.
And then John gets to preach to the choir, and then the choir yells back. That's exactly what happens. I've heard it.
Yeah.
But here's a question for the three of you before we get off topic here. Would you rather it just be called retropunk? Would you rather have it called retropunk, or would you rather have things mislabeled as steampunk?
Go on, Larry.
I'd rather have some things occasionally mislabeled. Yeah.
See, I think I would rather, if it's going to be mislabeled as retropunk.
Well, I mean, Eric, maybe we're misunderstanding. I thought you meant, do you want to just dump the terms diesel and steam and label everything retropunk? Is that what you mean?
Well, it's not up to me. But the thing is that when I talk to my steampunk friends, I make it perfectly clear that steampunk doesn't float my boat. I understand why some people like it. There are certain pieces that I like of steampunk. But the thing is like, if I'm in a group of people, don't lump me in with steampunkers. I would rather be lumped in with you as retropunkers. But that's the only time that I like to use that distinction, retropunk, because I'm not a steampunker. I'm a diesel punker. It's unfair. It's not true to myself and my friends who prefer diesel punk. It's just not fair to lump us in with the steampunkers. I'd rather use retropunk in those circumstances. I think that steampunk can exist on its own, and I think retropunk can a diesel punk can exist on its own. It's sort of like this. It's sort of like Great Britain or the because the thing is that you have Scotland, you have Ireland, and you have England. They're all a part of the British Isles, but they're also distinct among their own. I kind of consider retropunk being the collection of the British Isles, and we're England, and they're Ireland. Okay, you know, what's for tea?
That's a good way to look at it.
Very interesting. Food for thought.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, fantastic. Let's see. We've mentioned earlier that Halloween's approaching, and thought that maybe we'd go around the little group here and see what recommendations do you have for our listeners for a diesel punk Halloween movies, if you want to put something in and watch a little, mix a little diesel punk in with your Halloween. Johnny, start with you.
Well, I got to go with the classic Universal monster movies. Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman. And of all of them, my absolute favorite is the Abbott and Costello Meets series. And I think there was two of those. You just can't go wrong with those classic Universal horror movies for Halloween. And you know, the great thing is, yeah, they're classified as horror, but we're so far removed from when they were made that, you know, there's nothing inappropriate about them at all for a family audience.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Daisy?
Well, seeing as Johnny sort of took one of mine, because I was going to talk about the Universal ones, especially Dracula. The 1931 Dracula with Bela Lugosi got to be the only vampire movie I'd want to watch twice. I'm just not into vampires. Mm-hmm. But another one from the Diesel era that I have an odd fascination with is the Todd Browning film Freaks, which was very controversial in its day and remains controversial in some sects till now. Have any of you seen Freaks?
No. You know, I've never seen it, but I've heard about it because it was the first film to really document real-life sideshow circus freaks.
Mm. Right, right, and play them as the heroes and the good guys. You know, it completely took that trope of beauty is good and ugly is bad and turned it on its head. And I think that disturbed a lot of people because they weren't ready to accept that in their movies.
Well, and all of the quote unquote freaks were the real thing.
Yeah, they were real acts from circuses and sideshows.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm pulling up the I Googled what you're talking about, Daisy, and wow, that might be a tough movie to watch.
It is a it is a little bit tough to watch. It is a little bit powerful, but you know, just the historical aspect of it and the story behind the production and the reaction when it was made, that fascinated me enough to want to watch it at some point.
Huh. Okay. Well, wow. So, Eric, do you have any recommendations for our listeners?
Well, I have. I think that these are three of the quintessential Hollywood movies for diesel punkers to watch, and I'm gonna pick up where John left off with the Universal movies, and I'm gonna have to say that you need to watch the original Frankenstein. And then The Bride of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to really get into, like, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, by all means, you have to watch The Bride of Frankenstein to get what she was really trying to say, that it's not in the original book. I don't think you can watch Frankenstein without watching The Bride of Frankenstein. I actually think The Bride of Frankenstein is actually a better movie than the original Frankenstein, but I could be wrong. That's just my personal taste. Another one, and I was reminded of this earlier, is they did a diesel punk version of Richard III. What would have happened if Richard III took place in fascist Europe? And there's the creepy, sleazy factor of our friend Gandalf, who plays the title role. It makes my skin crawl. But for reasons that I can't really sort of, it's his performance and the whole Machiavellian aspect of, if you could get a hold of that. But
yeah.
I think that another one, and I don't think this gets enough credit, is Dark City. Dark City is another one of those. And get the director's cut. Don't mess with the other version. Get the exclusive, get the director's cut on Blu-ray. That is it's a great movie. It's along the same idea as The 13th Floor and The Matrix, but it's actually better than The Matrix. It's the entire idea of make-believe realities being imposed upon us by these higher beings watching down on us and screwing with our reality. Dark City is an actual better movie than The Matrix, along that genre, along that line.
I hear some skepticism. John?
Better than The Matrix, Eric. Yeah. I don't know. I'll tell you what. The first time I watched Dark City, fans of the show know, I did not like it. I felt like the characters really had no motivation. And it bothered me, especially the higher beings, these psychic vampires. You know, I still don't understand their motivation. However, the second time I watched the movie, I was just struck with how visually arresting
yes.
that movie is.
Yep.
And just how well they just captured everything. And the first time I saw it, I did not like Kiefer Sutherland's character.
No.
But, oh, really?
No, I couldn't stand him. But the second time I watched it, you know, you really get a sense of what a fantastic actor he really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the same guy who plays Jack Bauer, who played Doc in Young Guns, and played David in Lost Boys.
Yep.
And, you know, every single one of those characters is so completely different and removed from the other. And you really get a sense for his acting chops in Dark City.
He really is a fine actor.
He is.
I totally believe that.
I think it's fantastic. That's a great choice, Eric. I love that movie. My choices, I actually have two. After you've watched all the Universal Pictures, then you've got to watch the Dieselpunk spin on it with Young Frankenstein. And really, Young Frankenstein is really best if you've already seen all those wonderful originals that Johnny and Daisy were talking about. Mm-hmm. Because it's a love fest for those movies. Young Frankenstein,
and Larry,
you know the.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Daisy.
Did you know the props in Dr. Frankenstein's lab were actually ones from the original 1930s Frankenstein?
That is so cool. That is so cool.
And Larry, that movie, Young Frankenstein, is currently available at Target on Blu-ray for $5.
No.
And it was in theaters yesterday.
Yes, it was, and I missed it.
I saw it in the theaters, and I'd love to see it again in theaters. But the one that nobody's mentioned that I would mention is a Dieselpunk vampire movie called Shadow of the Vampire.
You've talked about this before, and it's been on my list, and I still have yet to see it.
It came out in 2000, and it stars John Malkovich and William Devoe. It was produced by Nicholas.
Mm-hmm. What a great cast!
Yes, and it was produced by Nicolas Cage. It's a Dieselpunk fictionalized account of the making of Nosferatu. But they start to question the actor that's playing the character Nosferatu, the vampire, because he comes out and he's always in character. He's never out during the day. Only comes out at night. They have to film at night because of it. And then strange things start happening on the set. People start getting sick. And, well, you kind of imagine where this is going. So I highly recommend it. By the time you're done with the movie, you'll be wondering, really, who is the monster in this film? It's a very good film.
Shadow of what?
Shadow of the Vampire.
And, I studied film history in college. And Nosferatu is one of the most influential films of early films and of the 20th century. And as you were telling about this film, I'm remembering that a lot of those stories did circulate around the making of that movie. That what is his name? Brecht, who played Nosferatu, he never was out of character.
Yeah, Shrek, I think.
Yeah, Shrek, yeah. And he freaked people out.
Uh-huh. And it kind of takes it to a dieselpunk spin. And I don't want to give anything away because it's so good how they handle that. And but I think it's one of the few movies, it was certainly one of the first movies that Nicolas Cage produced. I'm not sure how much production he's done since. But there's a variety, there's other great stars. Eddie Izzard is in it.
Wow.
It's a good movie. It's produced by BBC. It's a BBC film production.
Well,
and I think it was distributed by Lionsgate.
You know
okay,
what?
Okay, cool.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Go ahead.
I had the privilege of watching Nosferatu at the Bridal Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right across the river from Boston, just down the road from Harvard Square and Harvard University. And I saw it in the movie theater, and sitting in the movie theater with a whole bunch of movie buffs and film students who they had to watch it as part of like their homework or for extra credit, and there was a lot of people grumbling, oh, it's a silent film, and the way that it plays with light, everything is done with images, and the way it plays with shadow and everything it plays, it is one of those it's probably one of the few silent movies that I've seen that really creeped me out and really got under my skin. If you can see it in a theater with people, that's the best. It almost with any film, but this one in particular, with the way that the silver light plays on the screen and in the theater and on other people's faces. If you can think about it when you're watching the movie, take a look at your neighbor while you're watching the movie with the way it plays on light, and so watch how everybody in the audience is transformed into Nosferatu while we're watching the movie. It was quite an experience, and it's never been duplicated in my life since.
Wow. Well, can I recommend a movie not to see?
Always.
Please.
Whatever you do, at all costs, avoid the dieselpunk horror movie Frankenstein's Army.
Is it another one of those Nazi?
We talked about it a couple of years ago when it first came out. It's this Russian-made film, and you know it sounds like it's going to be cool. You know, these Russian soldiers during World War II get separated from their unit, and they run into this army of Nazi monsters created by Dr. Frankenstein. As a concept, that sounds awesome, doesn't it?
But. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sucked bad.
Don't you hate it when that happens, when a movie sounds like it's going to be so cool and then it turns out to be just awful?
Oh, it was so, so awful. Yeah, and not awful in a good way. Like Dead Snow, you know, the Nazi zombie movie?
Much better, much better.
That's so bad that it's good. You know, but Frankenstein's Army is just so bad that it's bad.
Well, I'll tell you another reason why I think that Frankenstein's Army failed so badly is because it tried to do like the Blair Witch found footage on top of that idea. I think it was just too much. I think it was the way that they did it. It was like they took these two great... First of all, they tried to steal the idea from Blair Witch, the entire notion of found footage. And then with this really over the top, you got to do one or the other. I don't know if you can do both unless you're going to like really commit with a great script and the costumes and the makeup. I disagree with John with this one caveat. You should watch Frankenstein's Army if you're a film student or you're making films. This is a perfect example of what not to do. See this movie just so you know the pitfalls and the pratfalls to avoid when making your own movie.
Well, that
I can accept
sense.
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yep. Well, folks, we've had quite a show.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
We have. Ooh, whole hour and a half of it. It's been a good time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Eric, welcome to the show again. Looking forward to having you on future broadcasts.
I can't wait. I can't wait for the next show. I mean, we just finished one, and I can't wait for the next one.
Well, and Eric, while we have you here tonight, tell our listeners a little bit about the Fedora Chronicles, because we didn't touch on that when I first introduced you, just that you're the founder and creator of it. But what is the Fedora Chronicles?
The original idea of the Fedora Chronicles was born out of the idea of kids do not have a history or notion of history behind the classic movies and the Indiana Jones movies. And because the thing is that there really were villains called Nazis. People tend not to remember that, or kids don't seem to realize that. I also wanted to have a place where, this is back even before I knew what the phrase, that there was the word diesel punk. I wanted a place where people can go and share their adventures. I know that there's a lot of people who do a lot of urban exploration, where people go and take photographs of abandoned buildings and stuff like that, or they go on these trips to these like magical places like Machu Picchu, or just the Irish countryside. Have a place. This is like, and I started this before there was ever an Instagram or there was other social media sites. And people could just drop their photos off and share them in slideshows that I would create for them. And it's just also a home for all the other stuff that it's like I write about. And I also have a column on my own website called Flicks to Hold You Over. And I write reviews. I'm not going to spoil the movie for you guys. I write reviews trying to explain to you why you should see these movies. Like if you were a fan of the Indiana Jones movies, or if you're a fan of Maltese Falcon or Casablanca, I try and introduce you to the readers other movies that I know that you're going to like. It's a movie that's gonna hold you over until the next Raiders of the Lost Ark or Star Wars sequel, and hence the name. And it's just a smorgasbord. It's just a dumping ground for people who are like-minded retronauts or diesel punkers to have stuff like, you know, kept in a permanent archive. That's it in a nutshell. And I also host a podcast with my fellow co-host Walt Schnabel, the author of Blood Club. It's called The Metaphysical Connection, and we talk about just supernatural stuff. We throw out all this evidence about the supernatural that we find, and we link to the show page, and we present you with the evidence. What do you think of these things? What do you think about UFOs or ghosts or exorcisms or hauntings or whatever? And that's what I do, and I've been making a little living at it at the same time. So. And everybody is welcome to contribute something to the Fedora Chronicles.
Very cool. Very cool. I've been a big fan of the Fedora Chronicle for a long, long time. As soon as I got involved in Dieselpunk, I found it. And I think it's a fantastic site.
I really appreciate that. I really do.
And that website is fedorachronicles.com?
It's either fedorachronicles.com or the Fedora Chronicles, because I bought both URLs. Because why not?
See, you're a smart man. Mm-hmm. Well, excellent. Well, hey, Larry, do we have anything else that we need to discuss?
I think we're pretty much done for the night, man.
Well, I want to encourage our listeners, as always, to send us your feedback, your email at feedback@dieselpoweredpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/dieselpoweredpodcast. Follow us on Twitter @dieselpodcast. And we got a couple of sponsors that help us keep the studio on and the lights on, and we want to encourage you to visit them. Eric mentioned earlier getting the audiobook of Man in the High Castle, and one of our sponsors is Audible, and you can download that book as a free audiobook just for trying out Audible on us. And that's audibletrial.com/dieselpoweredpodcast. Just use that URL, and you can pick any one of their over 100,000 titles free just for checking them out. And it's yours to keep whether you become a member or not. And I think Man in the High Castle would be a great first book for you to check out. And, listen and read along like Eric suggested. And if you're a fan of comics like I am, check out our other sponsor, Comic Bento. They do a mystery box of graphic novels every month, at least $50 worth for under $20. And that's at mycomicbento.com. And you can actually buy previous month's boxes. And I highly recommend the box from a couple of months ago. It was the time travel box, which included the graphic novel of the X-Men Days of Future Past and two great Dieselpunk pieces, Ivar Timewalker and the Kronos Commandos. Have you guys heard of Kronos Commandos?
No, I haven't heard of that.
Thanks to you, yes, I have.
Oh, Larry, this is so cool. It's an elite American military squad in World War II that is sent back in time by Albert Einstein to prevent the Nazis from weaponizing dinosaurs.
Oh, I remember now you talking about that.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And you can get it in the Tales That Time Forgot box from Comic Bento. Use our link at www.mycomicbento.com. That's mycomicbento.com. And we appreciate anyone who helps us out by checking out those sponsors. Well, Larry, you want to sign us out, my brother?
Okay. Well, thank you, Johnny. Some people who are friends of mine on Facebook know that I recently got out of surgery for a clogged artery on my heart. My left descending artery, I believe it was 2/3 blocked. And I guess my point on that is, folks, this can sneak up on you. I've been feeling some symptoms for a while and did a little denial. Oh, I'm just tired. I'm out of shape, I thought. And my family physician sent me to a cardiologist, and they did an angiogram catheterization the other day, and found that I was in serious trouble and saved my life. So, guys and gals, and by the way, ladies, the symptoms for men are not necessarily the same as for women. Talk to your doctor. Get yourself checked out. Encourage your family and friends to get themselves checked out. Seeing my doctor saved my life. And take care of yourself. Take care of others, because that's what life is all about.
Amen, yeah. My brother.
Yes, sir.
Daisy.
Yes.
You want to take us out, girl.
Say goodnight.
Well, I hope all you sweet cheeks and sheepas out there get nothing but treats this Halloween season, because you're good. You deserve it, because you listen to us.
I love it. I love it. Eric, any last parting shots for our listeners?
All I can tell you folks is to keep your chins up and your fedoras on, and tune in next time.
Outstanding. And as always, I'll close us out by saying swing hard, swing often. We'll catch you on the flip side.